And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's going on, people? How we doing? All right. It's been a relatively quiet week in terms of things going on.
Yeah.
But we've been super busy.
We have a lot of things. Just in advance, I'd like to apologize at the start for anything that may happen to my voice and or my my nasal passages during the course of this episode, as I got hit with a pretty nasty allergy attack, like just as we were about to record, because it is August in New York City and it sucks.
Ugh. Gosh, I'm fortunate enough to not suffer from allergies. So, but I feel you.
Great. Yeah.
You know, my brother is a bad, he gets allergies really, really bad. And, so I feel for you, man. And you definitely sound different.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going for the jazz effect on this episode. I might scat later.
Hey, oh man, I can't wait.
Yeah. I was watching John Wick and next thing I know, just mayhem. Boom. Yeah. Off the screen.
I wasn't watching anything that exciting before we decided to record. I was watching America's Got Talent. There's this weird character called Hans. It's some German dude in a leotard and lots of makeup.
Wow.
Who plays the accordion and then is doing a Spice Girls dance. So that's kind of stuck with me right now.
Interesting. That is, wow. Not really sure how to wrap my head around that.
Yeah.
But just in case anyone was wondering, John Wick's a great movie. Figured I'd remind everybody of that, because not that I forget, but I'm watching it again, and I'm like, man, this is just great.
Yeah. Actually, they just, Sideshow Toys, for those of you guys that are out there that are collectors of things, they just released an image of their, I think it's Hot Toys, actually, is doing a 12-inch figure of John Wick. It looked pretty cool. Definitely looks like Keanu Reeves. They did some really great work.
That Hot Toys stuff is awesome.
Yeah, I've got two of them. I've got a Vader and a Heath Ledger Joker. And they are both wicked cool. The Vader is from Rogue One. And the Heath Ledger Joker, it's the 2.0 version. So he's got these like cool rolling eyes and stuff like that. And he came with like the interrogation scene. Anyways, as I get into my little toy collecting commentary. But they make some really, really cool stuff. And if I had the money to buy more, I would. But they're like $270 a pop. So
yeah, I mean, if you're a collector there and you have the money, they're worth it. But yeah, it's not like you can just collect them all,
right? Yeah, right.
So you know, we after we finished recording last week, we just started we went on a tangent like off the air about a particular topic, and we wound up stopping ourselves because we were like, hey, wait a minute. This is something we should probably just talk about on the podcast, because it's something that we've discussed a lot. I know we've discussed it in person when we've, you know, gone to the get-togethers, and it comes up a lot after we watch movies, and this idea of things that can take you out of a movie. You know, so a movie that you're enjoying, and then all of a sudden something happens in that movie, and bam, like, that's it. It just takes you out of it. And I know my perspective on it is that there isn't something that will happen. There's no like 30-second thing or 1-minute little thing that can happen in the course of a movie that will completely take me out of a movie that I have been loving up to that point or really enjoying up to that point. Mm-hmm. The types of things that take me out of a movie are like, so just give you two examples of recent films, right? So, you know, when I went to see BVS, like, the thing that immediately took me out of that movie and really was distracting for me in the theatrical version was the fact that it looked like it was edited by like a fifth grader. Mm-hmm. who was just snuck into the editing bay and was running wild, hitting buttons, you know, like, so that, just the pacing, things like that took me out of that movie. Like I was getting frustrated watching it. And Godzilla also, the Gareth Edwards Godzilla. What took me out of that movie was the fact that, you know, I respected the fact that they didn't want to, you know, give you Godzilla from like the very beginning, and they were doing the slow burn with that. But the human element in that movie, you know, was really poor. So, you know, if we talk about Jaws, right? And that's always the example everybody uses when they say, oh, you know, they didn't show the shark for, you know, whatever, the first hour and change and whatnot.
Right.
But, you know, in Jaws, when there's no shark, you have Roy Scheider, Richard Dreyfuss, and Robert Shaw being awesome.
Right.
Right? So in Godzilla, like, you didn't have Godzilla, but you had Aaron Taylor-Johnson being as boring as anything. Like, he's as charismatic as a 2x4.
His best role was in The Illusionist.
Well, and I mean, he was really fine, and he was good in Kick-Ass, but that was a different thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, but, you know, it's different. And he, you know, just the direction of the character I wasn't crazy about either. He was basically like John McClane. Everywhere he went, he happened to be in a position to save the day, but that's a different thing. But, you know, and, you know, Elizabeth Olsen didn't have much to do except kind of look behind in fear. And it just, they did nothing with the human characters, and they were such a focus of that movie. So, like, that took me out of it. Like, I immediately didn't like that, his character in particular. And that, so those are the types of things that can take me out of a movie. The little things like, you know, I know we've talked a lot about, like, the moment in Doctor Strange. We talked about it when we were talking about comedy and film. Or the thing, like, at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy 2. You know, little comedic moments like that that are maybe out of place, depending on how you look at things. Like, that's not something that's going to completely take, that's something I may cringe at or may go, ugh, but it's not going to take me out of the movie. Like, I'm not going to start disliking a movie that I've enjoyed up to that point, like, just because of that one moment. You know, that 30 seconds doesn't ruin the other, you know, 2.5 hours or whatever. So those types of things don't, and even bad CGI, like, and this is one I think, well, we may disagree on, but, like, even bad, I mean, depending on how bad it is, but bad CGI won't even necessarily take me out of a movie. Because even, like, the distracting lip in Justice League, right? Which is one of the worst cases of CGI that I think I've ever seen. Like, it was weird and it was just strange and not appealing at all. But it didn't take me out of that movie. I mean, that movie had its own flaws or whatnot. But, like, sitting there, it wasn't like, I wasn't hating everything just because of that. As distracting as it was, or as bad as maybe you thought Steppenwolf may have looked. You know, or even like the bad CGI in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, at least the first one. You know, like, that doesn't take me out of the movie completely. Like, I wish it would have been better, but didn't ruin my enjoyment of the film. So I don't know. I think that one we probably disagree on a little bit. But what about you? What are some of the things that do or don't take you out of a movie?
This should come as a surprise to you, but it's continuity.
Right. Should have realized that. Yeah.
No, seriously. Like, that throws me for a loop. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's my OCD. But yeah, continuity in a movie. So it's kind of funny. So in watching Deadpool 2, which I think is a fantastic movie, the moment we see Cable in the future and I see the purple lights and stuff like that glowing around him, I'm like, dude, what timeline is he coming from? And I'm automatic, like, my brain goes into, like, trying to fit the puzzle pieces together. And then I have to tell myself, no, this is Deadpool. Like, don't even get caught up in that. Just enjoy the ride. So there are moments like that where I'm taking out of the movie. You bring up a really, really good example about BVS, because I also suffered. I don't want to say suffered, but I think I was affected by that editing process and what was delivered to us ultimately on the screen. And so, for sure, I was kind of like, wait a second. How did we get here? And, like, why is this happening right now? So those are moments when I'm taken out, is when I have to question, or not even when I'm questioning, but I'm struggling to follow what's happening in front of me. Or if there's a particular plot or storyline that just isn't syncing up with me, again, that plays to continuity. So that actually was one of the biggest issues, CGI stuff aside, Because I didn't really think Steppenwolf was that bad looking. I mean, for what it's worth, I've seen worse. Like, Superman's lip was really bad. And that was really distracting to me.
It was definitely distracting. Yeah.
I mean, that was the thing. I mean, I do think it was distracting enough that it took me out of the movie to think to myself, why was this released in the way that it was? And that essentially is taking me out of the movie, right? Like, because I'm not actually thinking about the movie anymore. I'm not really following along. I'm like, my mind went somewhere else.
Right.
Like a pause. You know, you're no longer following the narrative of what's on the screen, and you're in yourself and you're thinking about other things. That doesn't necessarily happen to me often. So when people say that, oh, I got taken out of the movie, or this part of the movie, you know, the comedy here took me out of the scene, I'm like, I don't really understand what that means. Well, one, because obviously I'm not a reviewer of film.
You're debating that one?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that to myself. The other thing that will do it to me occasionally is, and actually, this was another movie that you and I saw together, was Ready Player One. It wasn't necessarily that it took me out of the movie, but I did do a lot of comparison in my brain, like, because I had read the book before I saw the film. So in that sense, I was kind of like comparing, okay, this is doing this, or are they going to go in this direction? And I'm still following along with the movie. I'm just watching it while comparing notes, essentially. It's like the second screen experience. You know what I mean? I don't necessarily think it happens to me often. Now, one of the examples we talked about before, and it like literally, if you want to talk about taking someone out of a movie, like threw me out of the movie, was Once Upon a Time in Mexico, which was just a complete departure from what I had expected and what I appreciated and what I had grown to love in Desperado. And I go to see that movie, and it was just so different. And tonality the comedy was like too on the nose. And even some of the scenes, the action scenes there, were cut very odd. And I just got taken out of the movie to the point where I was like, I don't even want to see this anymore. And I walked out of the theater.
I literally was taken out of the movie.
I physically removed myself from the movie.
That's about as extreme as an example as you're going to get.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of other things. You know, it's interesting. I wonder if people can appreciate, and honestly, we'll throw this question out there to our listeners, and we really, really would appreciate some input from you guys and your thoughts on this. But, you know, here's a question. Like, in watching trailers and getting hyped up for a particular movie, do you go into a film like looking for those scenes? And in your search, is that ultimately taking you out of the film? Do you know what I mean? Like, if a particular scene isn't in the movie that you really enjoyed when you saw the trailer, I can think of Rogue One as an example there, where obviously if you weren't aware of all the reshoots that had happened, there was a lot missing from that final cut that appeared in the trailer. So I wonder, what do you think, Chris?
That's never really happened to me, to be honest with you. What I do think can happen, and this is one of the reasons why I don't, I especially nowadays, and because of like Rotten Tomatoes, like you don't really need to read like specific reviews and stuff anymore unless you want to. I mean, and I still will after the fact, but I try to learn as little about movies nowadays as possible, because what I do find is sometimes I will go into a movie with a preconceived, you know, notion of what people think about it. And I think sometimes that can take me out of a movie. Like, because like you were talking about with Ready Player One, how you had read the book. So you kind of spent a lot of the movie, even though you enjoyed it, you spent a lot of the movie thinking about, like, you know, comparing and contrasting.
Yeah.
Well, for me, like if I know that there's like a lot of people that are like not loving a movie or whatever, like I can sometimes spend a lot of time, or they loved a movie a lot. Like I'll spend a lot of time sitting there watching it, sometimes trying to figure out, like, especially if my opinion is a little different, trying to figure out, like, well, why am I not liking this as much as everybody? Or why am I liking this more than other people? Or why do I agree with everybody and I'm not like this? And so that's why I try to go in with as much of a kind of a blank slate as possible. It's a little harder these days, but I've worked this year especially, I've made a very big effort to try to not read spoilers, not look at, I watched the first trailer and like the first TV spot, and I don't really go on much after that. I don't read a lot of like the advanced reviews and things. You know, I mean, I'll have an idea of what people are saying about it before I go, but I try not to do too much. And I think it makes the experience a little bit better for me.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think, it's funny because I often will get into a debate with my wife about, I'm always like, I have to see a movie the first weekend. And she's like, well, why? And, you know, it's two reasons. One is very similar to you. I kind of want to refrain from, you know, immersing myself in spoilers. And if I'm really excited about a movie, I just kind of disconnect from, I don't like want to see TV spots. I don't really want to read anything anymore about it. I don't really want to care. I don't really care about anybody else's opinion, because I'm already sold on seeing the movie. And if I read your opinion or if I hear your opinion about a particular movie, I'm going to go into that thing, into that film, thinking about or looking out for certain things. And the other reason is that I want to be part of the cultural experience, right? There is nothing better than sitting in a room full of people who are all excited to see one thing for a whole bunch of different reasons, and to share in that excitement and kind of walk away from that moment with a, you know, with the excitement or, you know, question or whatever, you know. So when I went to go see Avengers Infinity War, I had, you know, completely disconnected myself from social media, because I just totally did not want to be spoiled about anything. And I remember coming out of that movie like, oh wow. So, you know, I agree. I think to some extent, you know, as we're watching films, and if you've got other people's opinions sort of swimming around in your head, I think you start to nitpick a bit.
Yep.
And you start to put on your own little reviewer hat, and you're like, so what do I think about this? Is the acting good? And then, you know, actually, you know, that's a good point too. Acting takes me out of a movie.
Like big bad time. Acting?
Bad.
Well,
like,
I mean, but that's something though that I think is, you know, that's one of those things though that's like inherent to the movie. So like, that's why, like, when I talk about like editing and things like that, like, I don't know that it even qualifies to say, I mean, I don't know if there are very many people that don't allow bad acting.
Challenge that. Are you a fan of Bram Stoker's Dracula?
I am. Oh, I know exactly where you're going with this, because I have the same opinion. And I know exactly what you're going to say. That
please,
every time Keanu Reeves is on the screen, the movie comes to a grinding halt.
Yeah. But
yeah.
Are you taken out of the movie?
I was not taken out of the movie, because there's so much good going on. But I guess that's what I was saying. So there's so much good going on there. But yeah, he's brutal in that. And... Uh-huh. You know,
his,
but it's
his
also
accent, his English accent. Is
it's
bad.
A disaster. Yeah, and you know, it's the whole like in Godfather 3. Not that that's an all time classic, but obviously, like, you know, Sofia Coppola is infamously awful in that.
Oh God, yeah.
And you know, but in general, like when bad acting is like rampant throughout a movie, you know, that's it's usually a bad movie, right? In general,
right.
So I don't know that even counts as being taken out. But were you taken out of Bram Stoker's Dracula completely?
Not at all,
because
man.
Of that?
That
no,
is like one of my all-time favorite films, and that's what I'm saying. It's one of those situations where I think. So I went on a pretty harsh, scathing rampage for that movie, How It Ends, that's on Netflix, and it's it was decent. Like, it had me going along for the ride. Like, a couple things. It was too long. And then all of a sudden, it took this, like, really weird turn. And they introduced another character, probably, like, the last 20 minutes, 30 minutes of the movie. And it just got really, really dark and very, very bizarre.
Yeah.
And the bad acting was just, like, I don't know. It was, like, someone who I thought was, like, decent in the movie just became really, really bad. And I'm like, what the hell? And I literally stopped and I looked at my wife. I'm like, what the hell are we watching now?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And she's like, I don't understand this. I'm like, this is bad. Like,
right.
This movie just, it, we were along for the ride too. And it just took us, I mean, it's a great example of it taking us right out of the movie. Cause at that point we were just like, okay, let's just finish it. Cause we've got like a little couple, but it, yeah, it was pretty uninspiring and pretty bad. But,
so I guess the moral of the story is if you're going to turn in a bad performance, right? Because I'm not going to
do it at the end of the movie.
Well, or be in a movie with Gary Oldman. It helps.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Although, I'm trying to think of another example of that. I mean, the dude just, Gary Oldman.
Well, he tends to not be in a lot of terrible movies, which helps.
No,
but,
no,
but yeah.
Man. He does a really good job at picking his roles for sure.
And, yeah. And he's going to chew up enough, you know, scenery there where it, you know, you can have a, you can be Keanu Reeves in that movie, because I don't think Keanu Reeves is a terrible actor, but you can be terrible like he is in that movie and it's still passable, which is rare,
yeah, I don't know what happened to him there.
Yeah, I don't know, it happens, I guess,
you know, it really does. I think it's the accent, for sure. I think he probably got caught up. I know where the bastard sleeps.
It's probably an error more in casting than anything, because I would imagine that that's something you run through, right, as you're casting, and someone must just have been fixated on Keanu Reeves and was just like, this is it, this is our guy, it's Keanu Reeves, we're going with
They're probably like, how do we make Dracula sexy, you know what I mean? This was in the 90s, and it's Winona Ryder, and I'm actually, the funny, so this is a complete side story, they were interviewing Winona Ryder and Keanu Reeves recently, and apparently on the set of Dracula, Francis Ford Coppola hired a legit priest to marry Mina and Jonathan Harker.
Yep.
And I think Winona Ryder is legit under the impression that her and Keanu Reeves are like married. I think it's like a little inside joke, but it was kind of funny because I was reading the interview and she's like, hey, I think we're actually married, like for real, because he hired like a real priest and we said I do and all of that other stuff. And Keanu was like, whoa.
That's dedication right there to your craft, to hire a real priest to do that.
Fantastic movie. Love Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yes.
It's a hidden gem. But, you know, this topic of being taken, you know, sort of out of films is intriguing to me, because I also wonder, you know, who are the people most likely to have that experience? I mean, do you check your brain at the door and, you know, just go into that experience of a movie? Or are you looking for... you're looking to critique it. For me, I don't necessarily go into a film looking to critique it. I go in for the ride. I go in for, you know, for the entertainment factor. I think it's after I've seen it, you know, once or twice, where I will start to analyze it, and or if it has such an impact on me that I'm left thinking about it after I've seen the movie, that's where I start to really analyze the experience I had in the theater and sort of what was being delivered to me.
Right.
So, you know, The Last Jedi is a great example of that, because it exceeded expectations for what I thought I was going to get in a Star Wars movie. And I was just kind of like blown away by some of the choices, for, you know, blown away in a good way, by some of the choices made in that film. And so I wouldn't say that it took me out, but it definitely caused me to reflect on I'm not getting what I thought I was going to get here, which is great. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no,
and,
I think it
made me actually dig in more.
It really comes down to, it's, I mean, in the end, it's all about personal taste, right? And experience. I mean, no, everybody has their own reasons, right, for why they're taken out of a movie, or what they like, what they don't like, and they're all valid, because it's their own opinion. You know, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, or it's like your opinion or different than your opinion. You know, for me, like you, I like to go into a movie and I want to be taken for a ride. And that's why, like, we tend to agree on, like, when we talked about comedy in movies and how comedy in superhero movies or in dramatic movies or sad movies doesn't necessarily take us out of the movie, because it's about a range of emotions, right? So, like, you go on a ride, right? You go on a roller coaster. That roller coaster doesn't just go down at 100 miles an hour, right? It goes up slow and then down and then sideways and backwards and all over. It takes you for a ride. So I don't mind if a movie is going to kind of give me a range of emotions and, you know, bring me up and take me down and make me sad, make me laugh all in the course of the movie. I'm okay with that as long as it's just not completely out of the blue and as long as it fits with the tone. I'm good with that. Some people want a little bit of everything, and some people just want, like, a sad movie to be a sad movie, or they want a comedy to just be a comedy. You know, it's why somebody like Judd Apatow, like, people complain sometimes about movies like Knocked Up, for instance, which can be, like, really funny for, like, 40 minutes, and then it becomes, like, this other thing, sort of, for, like, the next hour, where it's more of, like, an adult, still comedy, but it's, you know, it shifts its tone a little bit. It gets a little bit more serious. And some people have problems with that. I don't, but, you know, that's just the way people are. Like, we're all different. So I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, everyone goes into a movie with different expectations, with different things. And I guess, you know, ultimately it comes down to what you go to a movie for or what you're going to that specific movie for. I've left my brain at the door plenty of times going into movies, but certain movies. You know, but more often than not, I would rather, you know, I'm going to a movie to escape, right, and to be entertained. So I don't want to take it too seriously, but, you know, certainly you're not going to go into, like, a quote-unquote Oscar-contending film the same way you're going to go into, like, an Expendables movie, right? Where you clearly want to leave your brain at the door and enjoy yourself, and not, because you know there's going to be certain things that are going to be stretched, and, you know, you're going to have to suspend disbelief and things like that. That's just a given. If you're going to go and judge, like, a Fast and the Furious movie or a movie like The Meg, for instance, you know, the same way you're going to view, you know, a serious, you know, Oscar contender, it's a powerful drama. I don't, you know, they're different. I don't know how you're not going to enjoy probably either one.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. It's kind of funny because you brought up, like, going into films like the Oscar contenders, and in most cases, you know, it's kind of funny. I tend to avoid those movies in the theater.
I do too. I mean, not usually, anyway.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't go for, this sounds so shallow, but I'm not really into going to the movies for thought-provoking pieces of art. That makes any sense. Like, I want to go and have fun.
So you're not like an art house guy. You're not going to the local little, like, the art house theater to see.
No, just to see, like, some, like, you know, grassroots type film. No, not really.
I get that. I mean, that's the norm, really, right? I mean, just based on box office, you know, history, I mean, more people are going to see the sort of the mainstream entertainment pop film than they are the small little art house film.
Yeah, so that's the thing. So it's like, you know, if and it's not to say that I don't enjoy those films, because I do watch them, you know what I mean? I just see them at my own pace, and it's like one of those where if I have to get into the zone, you know what I mean? Like, eating popcorn and, like, drinking myself an icy or Slurpee, or whatever the hell it's called. Frozen ice shit. is like, I'm not going to sit here and watch, you know, some freaking, I don't know, deep film. Like, I'm just not going to do that and have popcorn and, like, you know, chill. It's just not the way I roll. I want to go. I'm going to have fun. I want to, like, check myself. Sounds bad, but I check myself at the door, and I tap into like, inner child Aaron, who is, like, his imagination goes wild and crazy, and he gets very excited to see, you know, really cool scenes on a screen. Like, literally, I just go there to check myself out, right? To immerse myself in the world.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I'm kind of paying for what I'm going to get, right? And so there isn't really, that sounds so blunt and very, like, unsophisticated, but that's, and I'm sure I'm the vast majority of people who are probably listening, you know, to our show, and or people who are going to the movies, or just, you know, people go to escape,
Yeah. I mean, that's every, I mean, you could say the same thing about music, right? I mean, you know, listen, for sure. The true artsy types, you know, the ones that are selling, well, these days, nobody sells records for the most part, but the most popular acts, right, are the pop acts, right? You know, the artsier bands, every once in a while, you're going to get one that kind of breaks out and breaks into the mainstream. But for the most part, you know, any art, pop, you know, popular art, mainstream art is always going to be stuff for the masses. It's not going to necessarily be the most thought-provoking stuff. It could be, and when it is, that's great. That's like the perfect storm. But, you know, that's just the way things are. And then you're always going to have your smaller, artsier, more thought-provoking things. And I don't think it's necessarily shallow or anything. I think one time I've actually been to like a true like art house theater. And it wasn't necessarily even to see an art house film. It was to see a movie called The Aristocrats, which was a documentary that was made, geez, probably about 13 years ago now, about a famous, like, off-color joke that's told, like, always behind the scenes. It's never supposed to be told on stage, right? It's something that, and it's a great documentary, and it's something that every stand-up comedian, like, has told, like, off stage, but it's never told on stage. And the whole point of it is it's basically all these stand-up comedians, right, just telling their version of the joke. And, you know, people like Bob Saget tells a particularly filthy version of it, which is awesome. And but at the end, it all builds to Gilbert Gottfried. He's at like a Friars Club roast or something like that, and he's not doing well, so he actually has the gall to tell the Aristocrats joke on stage, right? Oh, which is like something you're not supposed to do.
Right.
And he's killing. Like Rob Schneider was like on like the day, he's on the floor, he's laughing so hard, he can't control himself. Like it's the funniest thing. He's just going on and on with this. And just like the balls that he had in the moment to do it and how well he pulls it off. So that's actually a really great documentary. You should check that out. It's called The Aristocrats. I went to an art house movie actually in like your neck of the woods. To an art little small theater out that way to go see it because nobody else was really playing it at the time. And so that's the only time I've ever really been in a theater like that that was only playing like small films. Like there was no mainstream movies at all. I'm the same way. I mean, I go to movies for escape too. You know, if it's more than that, even better. But I'm good with just like, you know, being distracted for a couple of hours. And, you know, if the movie makes me think about it later on, then that's great, but it doesn't necessarily have to.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we're both on the same page.
Yeah.
And so now everyone knows how we roll when we go to
there
the movie.
Go. So we're
I'm sorry, before we switch gears though, and I will just close with this, but be that as it may, when we have our first watch party, you will know that Chris and I will probably talk ad nauseum about the film that we saw. And it's not because we're being critical, but it's just like our reactions. It's like us shooting from the hip.
Well, I hope that wouldn't surprise anybody.
Nah.
Yeah. If you're listening to the show,
we have lots to say about movies, obviously.
Breaking news. We will have a lot to say about a movie that we just watched to anyone that's listening to the show. But what I was going to say is we do want to throw out, I know we kind of went off in a few different directions there, but the original conversation about things that can take you or have taken you out of a movie, we want to throw that out to you, the listeners, as I guess our first question of the week, which is, what are some things that either do in general or have specifically taken you out of movies? We'd like to know. So send those thoughts along. And we'll probably talk about some of the feedback on the show next week. So let us know.
Yeah. But I will fight you if you mention Luke Skywalker tossing his lightsaber over his shoulder. Just don't do it. No, I'm kidding. I know I totally respect people's opinions of that scene. So anyways.
Well, you know, speaking of that can lead sort of into our first question. We got a question from JRB. Who asked Rian Johnson's Star Wars trilogy? I don't believe it's been announced what story it will tell. What storyline do you want to see here? Or where do you want to see him take it? Knights of the Republic for me, please. So, for me, this is an easy one. Because what I loved about The Last Jedi and what Rian Johnson brought to the table is the fact that he took Star Wars to new places. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this a lot, right? In the we did like a whole, what, trilogy of episodes on Star Wars. And that was the thing that I loved the most about it. So I would like to see Rian Johnson just take Star Wars to even newer places. I don't even want this trilogy or need this trilogy to be related to anything that already exists in Star Wars. I would love it if it just broke completely new ground, you know, like the original Star Wars, A New Hope did at the time, and just start something fresh and exciting. That's what I would hope for. So,
question for you on that one.
Yeah.
Timeline, where?
You know, it doesn't necessarily matter to me. I haven't really thought much about that. I'm personally, as somebody, I prefer we always be going forward. Mm-hmm. So I guess that would be my main preference, would having not seen episode 9, right?
Right.
I don't know how this, the quote unquote Skywalker saga is going to end. So, right. You know, my first instinct would say I'd like it to be set after that somewhere. I don't know how they're going to end it though. But yeah. Still, I'm going to always say that I would prefer that this Rian Johnson trilogy, I would probably prefer it to be something forward thinking, but you know, depending on where they end up with episode 9, maybe it has to go backwards. But either way, that doesn't necessarily matter to me, as long as it's its own thing and it doesn't have to be a slave to what came before, what came after necessarily. Then I'm okay with that.
Yeah, naturally I agree. Although I kind of bounce back and forth between where I would want his films to live in terms of timeline. Like, I would want it, if it was in the past, I'd want it to be far enough away where there is no mention of A or any Skywalker at all, right? Like, don't even care.
Right.
What I think he did really well in The Last Jedi was a lot of the sort of expansion of the Force. And I would love to see a story or stories revolving around that, like just pure, you know, force wielding. Maybe it's even something along the lines of like someone first discovering the, you know, the powers of the Force, and you know, it's a crazy story about someone who's an outcast and they just are coming to grips with it, but it's almost like an X-Men story. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the first mutant kind of thing.
You want it to be the origin of midichlorians? No.
Okay. Not at all. Midichlorians, dude.
Talking about things that take you out of a movie.
Where's
right?
The edit button on this one? No, or in the future, far, far, far enough in the future, where, you know, obviously there's some good conflict happening in the galaxy, and that they, I guess, lightly, you know, I don't even want them to lightly refer to anybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want a Star Wars story that actually is completely
right.
Detached.
Yeah, just let's get our own thing, and ultimately it's for the next generation of fans, but, you know, it could still appeal to our generation as well, right. So, like, let's right. Do it, yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. It's so funny because I think about it, and I'm like, oh, you know, I want to know about what, you know, I want to feel connectivity to... I wanted to feel connected to the previous movies, but I really don't. You know what I mean? Because every Star Wars movie that we've had has been connected to things we've already seen. I mean, literally right. everything. So,
because even with this current trilogy, as much as you know, I've said how my favorite things about it are the new characters, not the nostalgia. There still is that nostalgia there, right? And it's unavoidable. So it yeah. hasn't only been about the new characters. There's familiar musical beats.
Skywalker.
Right. There's Skywalkers. There's everything.
You know, it'd also be interesting if he, you know, pulled a movie that had absolutely nothing to do with the Force use. You know, if it was a sort of underground story. Now, to answer the question, I mean, you know, Knights of the Old Republic would be interesting, and I think at some we might at some point get that. I don't necessarily think that it's Rian Johnson's. It's Rian Johnson's to have. I mean, I think for some reason the Knights of the Old Republic feels more of like an episodic show.
I was just about to say that. Like, Knights of the Old Republic probably works fantastic as a show for that streaming service that we're all excited about.
And I mean, they did hire Weiss and Benioff, so
that makes some sense, right?
Yeah, obviously. So, you know, telling those stories over a significant period of time, you know, could be 5-6 seasons. I think that would be really cool to see, especially if, you know, the budget is there. Because there'd be some really cool stuff that they could do and really set the stage for, you know, good versus evil and really, really dig in on that. But, you know, I think Rian Johnson proved himself, at least in my eyes, to pay enough respect to the lore and to push it in new ways that makes it even more exciting, you know. So I fully trust this franchise in his hands, and I think he's going to do great things. I wish him nothing but the best. And you know, he will always have a fan in me. And yeah, I just, you know, I'm itching to find out what he's really going to do. You know, if it's something completely disconnected from everything, I'm cool with that. Like, really cool with that.
Let me ask you this, as the huge Star Wars fan that you are, you know, talking about, you and I, we basically agree that we'd like this to be something completely new, right? And disconnected. As much as you can be, anyway. But how do you feel about completely new and different? Like, would you like the music to be completely different? Would you like the look to be completely different? Like, or is it more just about new characters, new places? Would you just like this to have a completely fresh coat of paint? Like, new musical beats, new themes, new look, new cinematography, all of that, or is just more new characters, new places?
Damn, that's a good question. This is a complicated answer. I can totally see it being something different, right? New, fresh coat of paint. Everything you mentioned, new music, new beats, new, you know, because society evolves, and if you were to look back on the way we lived 50 years ago, that's very different, right? Even the way that we spoke 50 years ago is different. The way that we interacted with one another is different. Our cars look different. You know, style is different, all of that. So I can understand an evolution in the galaxy given, you know, a significant period of time. So I'm okay with that if it's done through that lens, okay? What scares me about that is essentially there are elements and there is an essence of Star Wars that is an intangible, right? And I think that intangible is comprised of all of those things that make it look and feel like Star Wars. So and it's less on the music side of things, because I think stylistically, as John Williams has stepped away from only doing the sort of, you know, core trilogies,
right,
there have been some liberties taken with the way that the music is scored, right? So great example is the original, is the sort of like riff on the Star Wars theme in Solo, which didn't necessarily feel like, and I haven't listened to the soundtrack. This is bad, because that's right, like the only Star Wars movie, and I don't know, it has nothing to do with Solo, honestly. But anyways, it you know, when the trailers came out, it sounded and it looked a little, it felt a little different. The music was different. But yeah, I think music aside, there are just other things like the way that the droids look. And, you know, as I say that, I'm thinking, you know, we are starting to get something more in each movie that we've seen, right? Like, think about Canto Bight.
Yeah.
A whole new range of aliens that we've never seen before. Sure. There's a whole different, you know, whole new races and species of aliens that we've never, ever seen in Star Wars. And that's what I think is beautiful about it, is that we've only been looking at it through you know, a very narrow lens.
Yeah, this is a whole galaxy. We're supposed
right,
to be
exactly.
At.
So I kind of imagine it maybe being completely different and feeling completely different and sounding completely different, but the essence of what makes it Star Wars, which would be, you know, struggle against good and evil, the Force, that kind of stuff. I think those are inherent pieces of the mythology that it's kind of hard to strip away.
Yeah, you still have to keep the opening crawl, though, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that
has to be a thing.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be good. But who knows? I mean, it could be the Broom Boy saga. You know what I mean?
Could be. Right, that's what I mean when we say we don't know how this thing ends right now.
Yeah.
With episode 9, like who knows where that's going to go, and
that would be completely different for us because every character up until this point has had a connection to a Skywalker, right? Every
yes.
one of them,
yeah.
With the exception of Broom Kid. So who knows, and other Force users. So if Luke Skywalker is gone and Leia is gone, you know, all of that is sort of washed away and they just become a myth and legend, then, you know, anything that comes after episode 9, depending on however they end this, which is why I seriously hope that Rey is not a Skywalker, and that Ben Solo dies. Anything after that is going to be without a Skywalker, without actually being in the room with a Skywalker.
Right.
And that makes it that's interesting to me.
Yeah, I agree. So let's go. Is the, I guess the final question for today from, well, it's a two-parter really. So it's from Ron Diesel. He first says, what are your top five favorite live action superhero costumes? And
ooh, that's a good question.
You know, that you love and would wear either during Halloween or Comic-Con events.
Ooh, you know, do some cosplay?
I'm not much of a cosplayer these days, but I have.
Have you cosplayed?
No, actually. But I have worn many a Halloween costume in my life.
Oh, there goes mine right there.
What the heck is that?
No one.
Everything okay, all right so over there?
I'm waving to folks with my Infinity Gauntlet.
Oh, okay.
It sounds weird. Like when it charges up, it sounds like a fart.
I'm never going to be able to watch Infinity War the same way ever again. Because now instead of a finger snap, I'm going to be thinking of what if he just ripped one.
Should have aimed for the butt, Thor. right down the crack. No, that's a damn good question. Let's see if I can name comic book costumes. So live action comic book costumes. Okay, let's start with
or superhero
start with
costumes.
DC.
Yeah.
I have to go with the classic Christopher Reeves Superman outfit.
Yeah, the tights.
Yeah, because that was my Superman. You know what I mean? That was right. That was literally my favorite character jumping off a comic book page. And I would, you know, I would never expect full blown muscle suits. You know, I'd expect the guy to look like, you know, like he actually has muscles under there. Not that, you know, his neck is one size and then his traps are another size and then his triceps are, you know what I mean? Like it just looks awkward to me. And this, that was actually one of my biggest critiques with Zachary Levi.
Yep.
But anyways, so yeah, so that's one. Did he call out X-Men? He did, right?
That's the second part of the question. Yeah.
Okay. Well, like I don't like any of the costumes from the X-Men.
Yeah. I mean, they really didn't do much with the live action.
No.
I mean, they were basically all fairly generic and the same, right? There was not much distinction there.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, I, you know, the First Class ones were pretty cool, but I wouldn't put them in my list.
And they also take a while to appear, too.
Yeah. The second costume live-action comic book is the Batman Begins costume. I love that bat suit. Like,
Batman Begins, really.
The Batman Begins suit, like, just the way, like, and I know it was his neck, but he looked big. Like, he looked like a big dude in Batman Begins, and he was. Christian Bale was coming off of The Machinist, getting himself down to...
Yes, a very unhealthy turn of events.
It was like, what, like some growth, maybe like 100 and something pounds?
Yeah, he emaciated himself and then just...
And then bulked up
in like
showed up on set at like 2:30.
Yeah.
And not being able to fit into his bat suit. And actually you could see how thick he is in the scene
where he's overstuffed in that one.
Yeah. But he, I think he looks better that way anyways. But I really prefer that suit. There's just something very tactical about it. I like the Dark Knight one, but he looks super lean there. He doesn't, you know, the menacing factor of Batman is kind of not there. I kind of like the Dawn of Justice, the BVS bat suit a bit, but I don't. I don't know what it is about it. Maybe it's the leather. It's just the leather cape that kind of bothers me. But anyways, okay, I digress. Number three, Iron Man. Any version of his suit. It just looks awesome.
Yes.
It looks so freaking good. You know, I like the – I even like his Mark 1 suit when he comes out of that cave.
Oh, It's cool.
Such a great interpretation of the comic book version of his suit.
Yeah.
The mask and all of that. And even just the way that it's evolved over time. Like, and what we got in Infinity War was like something I've been dying for, because I'm a big fan of the Extremis storyline.
Yep. Which they did Extremis a little bit in Iron Man 3.
Extremis. Yeah. But not really.
Well, I mean they did, but it wasn't it wasn't true to the
books. So I got two. I have two more. That's three, right? So Superman, Batman, Iron Man. Tom Holland's Spider-Man costume. I dig that a lot.
The one in Homecoming, right? Not the
Avengers. The one in Homecoming. Yeah, the Iron Spider suit is cool, but the Homecoming suit is just badass. Like love that suit. Another costume. Jeez, there's so many characters to pick from. Deadpool. I don't think it gets more accurate than that.
No, I was about to say Deadpool is sort of the holy grail, right? Because it's just as comic book accurate as, I mean, you could possibly get, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean that is like ripped directly from the pages, and it looks amazing. Even the way that they in post articulate the eyes, but the eyes are still very much there when he's acting. Oh, here it is. Got it. Easy. And it probably is my favorite. It is probably my favorite suit. It is the Captain America suit.
Which one?
The tactical.
Not the first Avengers.
1940s one? Suit that makes an appearance in Winter Soldier.
Oh, when the one he finds and.
Yeah, the one he takes out of the museum and wears it again. And now his suit has sort of evolved.
How do you feel about the red-brown Captain America suit?
The red-brown?
Red-brown from those movies, the old-school movies, where it was like...
Sorry, I thought you said red-brown. I was like, what?
No. Well, might as well have been red-brown, but...
So bad. His face did not fit. You want to talk about a Santa Claus face?
Yes. Well, actually, no, wait. You're talking about... I think you're talking about the... That's the Matt Salinger...
That's the
1990. The 90s one. That's that was like J.D. Salinger's.
Yeah, there was that. Nephew.
The red brown one was the one where he wears like the motorcycle helmet.
The helmet. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I don't like it.
And like he's got like tights on and stuff.
Yeah, so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, dude, you're top five.
So I always loved, for me, even though, and I get why some people have an issue with it. My favorite still all-time live-action superhero suit is still Batman 89. I love it. I have action figures and dolls and
gotta get all that hot kinds toys. Of things.
I have the NECA, like the big, okay, like the 12-inch one.
Nice.
That's like pretty scary. It's like having like a little Michael Keaton in my closet, but
with the lip and chin.
Yeah, exactly. That I just love that suit. I just love the, you know, the all black, and it still has like the classic, you know, with the yellow, logo, insignia, whatever. So I just love it. It fits the movie. It fits what they were going for. It looks comic booky, but it's still, it doesn't look really goofy. So that I love. And it also, you know, Michael Keaton's a believable badass Batman in that suit. You know, considering, you know, outside of the suit, he's not necessarily anything imposing, right?
Mr. Mom.
Yeah, so that will always do it. I've not, the one thing that I've never been crazy about, as much as I love the Nolan movies, was any of the suits. I guess Begins is probably the best of the three, but I didn't really love any of those suits. I thought that, I know, and again, he had a reason for it. He was going more practical, grounded, mm-hmm, reason for everything, but we've talked about it a lot, and that kind of ties into the second part of Ron's question is sometimes, it, you know, it's a superhero, enough, you know, just you know, you don't need to, doesn't need to be that real. You know, make
right,
it look cool.
Right.
So that would be, that's always my top. I don't know that, I mean, there have only been, what, three Superman suits, essentially, on film or in live? Well, no, in live action, there have been a lot, right? Because you've had Lois and Clark and the 2 Seconds of Smallville and Adventures of Superman. But I hate the Superman Returns suit would be on my list of top five worst, or least favorite comic book.
What is it? It's the emblem, right? Like
the emblem, the red underwear things are too small, makes his torso look too long. The emblem is just I didn't like
too
it at all. It's too small for his chest. I didn't like the
color
did with
palette.
It. Sucked. Yeah, I hate that outfit. I hate that costume. But I don't know that I put any of the Superman ones in there. I like the Man of Steel era Superman costume when it has the color in it. Like when you actually see it, like without the muted color palette, it's pretty cool. But I wouldn't put that in my, I don't think in my top five. I think Iron Man's definitely there. I just think that's like the home run of the MCU from a comic book franchise. I don't know that I would put the Tom Holland Spider-Man in there either. I prefer that one probably to any of the other Spider-Men that we've had.
I didn't mind the
I just think for
the Amazing Spider-Man 2,
that
the
was
Andrew
fine.
Garfield
yeah,
suit was pretty cool.
For me, the only thing that bothers me about the MCU Spider-Man suit is I think the spider is too small. I mean, you're just nitpicking here a little bit. I would prefer it be a little bit more big and grand, but that's a nitpick. Mm. Wow, I don't know. I mean, I like the, I do love that Captain America costume that he finds in the museum. Although,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
What about the Black Panther?
Black Panther looks great. I mean, that's another costume that's great. There's not much to that costume, you know. So like visually, it's not like, wow, that's the most exciting thing I've ever seen. But it looks fantastic. Doctor Strange, I thought looked fantastic.
Yeah, that's a pretty,
that's a pretty grand, you know, costume if you're going to wear it like as a costume. There's a lot of things happening in that. So I loved the look of that, especially because Doctor Strange, again, is another one of those characters that could have looked ridiculous, and I thought he looked pretty good. I don't know, was that five? I lost count, but I don't know. And you know what? I'm going to go TV route, kind of. I love what they did with the moments that we got to see the Punisher in this Netflix series, in like the with the skull and the way they did that, I thought was fantastic.
Yeah,
that's going to be in my top five. Yeah, spray paints it on and it looks great, and like we've been waiting to kind of see that.
Yeah,
that kind of a thing, and yeah, I loved that. That was my favorite of of all the live, not that there's been much to compare to, but of all the live action Punishers, that was by far my favorite. But I think that was a badass costume, so I would put that in my top five.
Yeah, they you know, speaking of costumes, I think they need to update Daredevil's for sure.
Yes, they do.
It does some weird, I don't know, I don't mind it, but it becomes a little distracting because it seems like it sits too forward on his face.
Well, because he's really not supposed, I mean, in the comics, he doesn't, his nose isn't covered, right? And they decided to cover the nose.
Oh, that's right.
So
that's what
makes it look a little off. And I kind of get why you would, it doesn't really make much sense to have your nose exposed in that.
Right.
Not for fighting purposes or
that damn thing all the time.
Yeah. Or for identity purposes too. You're almost revealing too much of your face at that point. But
yeah,
you're right. That's what kind of throws you off a little, but it's still better than the leather.
Ben Affleck one.
Yeah, the members only jacket.
Ben God, Affleck, that's such a you know what
costume.
That movie starts off great. Starts off better than I expected it to. I actually enjoy the first probably like 30 minutes of that movie, and then it's like implodes.
Have you ever seen the director's cut of that?
I did. I watched it recently.
I never have, and I hear it's supposed to be. Is it better?
Yeah, a little bit, but yeah, still
not much though.
Yeah, right. I forgot the director's name. Something Johnson.
Mark Steven Johnson, I think.
Mark Steven Johnson, who gave us Elektra, which is no forgiving.
No, that should be
there are those horrible Ghost Rider movies.
Right.
It's funny, you know what? People talk about. This is a side note and not, and we should totally get to Ron's second part of the question. But I will say that a lot of people like to think that, you know, folks are out there getting down on DC and, oh, DC just needs to, find their footing. But I think people forget that Marvel also went through a very, very rough patch before launching Iron Man in 2008. We had two very, very bad Fantastic Four movies. We had two equally as bad, if not worse, Ghost Rider movies. We had a Daredevil movie. We had an Elektra movie. I mean, there are a whole bunch.
Man-Thing.
What?
Man-Thing, my favorite.
The Punisher.
Well,
twice.
There's right, three versions of the Punisher.
Well, yeah, there's a Dolph Lundgren, there's a Thomas Jane, and there's a Ray Stevenson.
Yeah. And I actually.
Ray Stevenson one actually is pretty good.
I believe that Punisher Warzone is actually an underrated.
I agree.
It's so over the top and ridiculous. And it's not, I mean, it's not deep on any level, but it's kind of an underrated, like you have to watch it just to, the audacity. I do too. The audacity that movie has to exist. It's just, it's fun. It's definitely fun.
Anyways.
Well, let's get to the second part of
absolutely.
Ron's question. He says, we always hear what works on printed pages not going to work on screen. Since Marvel is going to get the X-Men, do you think they'll be able to find a way to make Wolverine's costume work on the big screen, especially with his mask on?
I would think so. Yeah. I'd be fairly optimistic in that, actually. The only character that in the MCU, and I'm kind of flying through a crazy list of them right now in my mind's eye, that has not translated from screen to from page to screen in the way that she appears in the comic books is Scarlet Witch, for the most part. She's got some weird headpiece and a crazy leotard and a cape.
Yeah.
But I think they've done a decent job with kind of keeping her simple.
Sure.
And street fashionable.
But you look at like even a character like Vision, right? They went pretty literal with Vision.
Looks like Vision.
Yeah, and you didn't think that was necessarily going to happen. And you're like, wow, that's Vision. Wow, look at that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, every character has been well represented in their costume form. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if they threw Wolverine with a mask on.
Or maybe they won't. I mean, well, first of all, let's not assume that they're even going to do Wolverine, at least right away. But if they do, maybe he won't have them. I mean, there have been versions of Wolverine without the mask in the comics. They don't necessarily have to do the mask, but maybe just to differentiate, maybe it's not the worst idea, right? To throw him in the mask.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool.
Yeah,
I think it'd be really cool, actually.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, like one of my favorite scenes, and I think we talked about this when we got into Spider-Man, was I like seeing the man behind the mask. I love seeing someone getting beaten up and their costume get all tattered and destroyed to reveal, like, you know, the man underneath. I really enjoyed that scene in Spider-Man, like when his mask is basically blown off his face and whatnot by the Green Goblin. So I think it'd be a really cool dynamic because essentially, you know, Wolverine himself is indestructible. So it'd be awesome to see him get sort of blown to bits and his costume, like, obviously gets shredded up and basically becomes non-existent. He's just kind of standing there like, yeah, I'm still here. Like what they do with Deadpool. Like Deadpool uses duct tape.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when he gets his legs ripped off or his bottom half of his torso ripped off, he uses duct tape to fix everything. It's like really, really funny.
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of those people that believes that there really should be no such thing as, oh, what works in print won't necessarily translate to film. Well, let's try it. Because, you know what, we've seen examples, you know, that we've spoken about in other episodes and talking about other movies where they've gotten too cute because they didn't think what worked on the page was going to work on film. And we've gotten things like The Green Goblin and Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. You know, which was all the product of them not believing that that character, the way it was drawn in the comics, could possibly work on screen. And it was a huge failure, and they probably would have been better off just coming up with a creative way to make him look like the Green Goblin. And we would have been more accepting of it, because guess what? These are movies based on comic book characters. You know, yeah. I mean, what's the difference whether it's on the page or on a screen? I mean, we're already going into this suspending disbelief, right? We're going into this movie to believe that these people can fly, that these people have superpowers, that, you know, these huge battles are going to be taking place on Earth. Like, why can't we just try to be somewhat literal and not get too caught up in, oh, you know, it's not going to work.
No, realism.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And
that,
I think
that's essentially where it is.
I think we've gotten away from that a lot now. You're starting to see things that are a little truer now to the comics. I know that when they were doing the original X-Men franchise, I know that was their mindset was, well, it's not going to work on screen. Those costumes aren't going to work on screen. The yellow and the blue, or the, you know, depending on the brown and the yellow. And it's like, well, you didn't try. And you know what? Maybe they wouldn't have in the time, but I don't know that that was a necessity. So yeah, I say just go all in. I mean, if you're going to do it, and I don't see why Marvel wouldn't. So far, they've given us a lot, you know, visually.
Yeah.
When it comes to,
yeah, I think,
you know, the
I think
looks.
Their costumes are super screen accurate. I mean, there is no. We forgot one. Wonder Woman's costume is pretty.
Well, it
pretty
is, although he mentioned one I would wear for Halloween and Comic-Con.
Right, sorry.
So that's why I left out Wonder Woman. But that's a great costume, especially when the color is put into it.
Yeah. Actually, matter of fact, there's a guy who pops around New York Comic-Con, literally, like, long hair, full-blown beard, beer gut, in a Wonder Woman costume. This dude is.
Oh, I've seen
him for like 3 years in a row.
Are we gonna meet him this year?
Yeah, we should get him on the show. It's like, hey man, we called you out. Shouted you out.
Okay.
What's your name? Why do you dress like that?
You could do that interview.
Not judging.
Yeah.
Does it hurt? Does the thong hurt? No, I'm interested, and I think recently. You know, it's funny because as I think about this, like the whole realism of suits or what looks best. I also wonder why, because, you know, we talked about this during our Spider-Man episode, but, you know, they had a very different approach to that Green Goblin costume before they decided to go down that road of the tactical green suit. You know what I mean? And it looked really creepy, and I thought it would have done.
And they got cold feet and.
Yeah, they just decided, no, that's not going to work, and maybe it's too expensive. But that's the only, you know, that's the only, I would say the only costume that kind of stepped out. Because Doc Ock in the second movie looked phenomenal.
Yeah, although he wasn't comic accurate, though. I mean, he was just basically, he wore regular clothes, and but he had the arms.
And a trench coat.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't have the green.
And he had no shirt on.
And no funky glasses. Well, he did have the glasses, I think, right?
Glasses.
He didn't have the, like, the Mo Howard bowl haircut, though.
No. No, they didn't. But yeah, I think if anyone's going to do, you know, comic book accurate costumes, it's certainly going to be Marvel. Although, like I said, DC can't stray away either. Although their Green Lantern costume, shame, guys. And what we're getting in Shazam looks really good. Aquaman.
Well, they've gone with a different look. Maybe, because I mean, there is that footage of him wearing the, you know, kind of the classic,
like, right,
costume, and I went crazy when I saw that because I thought it looked fantastic. You know, even though he physically doesn't look like the, you know, the classic Aquaman, you know, the costume still can, and be bold to put him in that thing. I say go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you're right. I think the days of trying to fit practical outfits where it doesn't make sense. I mean, obviously for Captain America, he's a soldier. Falcon, soldier, Bucky, soldier, their costumes have to kind of match who they are, right?
But isn't that really the point, though? Like, even in the comics, like, I mean, and essentially, like, the costumes are supposed to match who they are, right? I mean, that's the point. Right,
although, you know, Captain America had that weird, like, feathery, scaly costume.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, there's always, you know, you're up for artist interpretation, well,
right,
like,
and
that,
that's early, you know, and that costume appears in the movie.
Yeah,
they actually produced that costume and it was great. So, you know, Thor, for example, Thor is also another character that is represented well in his costume, and even in the way he's evolved throughout the MCU, his costumes look badass, man. They're really good. Even what they did in Ragnarok, because he really didn't have a costume, you know?
Thanks to everybody who sent in questions. And is there anything else you wanted to mention before we get out of here?
I still haven't seen Ant-Man and the Wasp, man. I feel very bad and guilty about that.
Oh, you'll get over it.
I'm using this as a little therapy
session.
It's
very fun. I'm not gonna lie. It's a fun movie.
Oh, you
saw
it.
I did see it. It's a fun movie.
I feel like I'm missing out. I just haven't.
You'll enjoy it. You'll be entertained by it. It's not gonna rock your world or, you know, change much in your life, but it's a fun couple of hours. There's some laughs, there's some good action, good effects. And, you know, if you liked the first one, you'll like this one. You may even like this one a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the first one. And the unfortunate thing is this is, like, the first and I think it's not because it's because of it being Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's because I just haven't had the time. But it's the first MCU movie I've missed in the theater.
Yeah, well, you won't. I mean, I don't think you'll regret it much when you watch it, you know, however you wind up watching it. I'm obviously at home somewhere, but it's not a movie that had to be seen on the big screen. I mean, yeah, with some of the effects and stuff, some of it could be cool watching it on the big screen, but ultimately, I like the original one. I think you'll be able to enjoy it, you know, even at home.
All right. Yeah. Well, hopefully I'll get to see it. Hopefully. If not, I'll buy it. Solo comes out soon. As a matter of fact, Solo comes out, I think, in about 2 weeks, maybe.
It's amazing. I have almost completely forgotten about that movie.
Yeah. So that'll be released very soon. Maybe we should, maybe that's another giveaway.
Solo?
Yeah.
To see it for the first time, thanks to the Fanboy Garage?
Yeah, for free.
Yeah.
If you leave us a 5-star review and or buy some gear and send us an email. But yeah, maybe we'll do something on that front, because we have to celebrate, because our Solo episode is our best performing episode. So
that's true as of now.
Yeah. It's really good. Keeps on, people keep on listening to that one.
They do. They do. Yeah. They didn't go watch the movie, but they're listening to us talk about it over and over and over again.
From the Fanboy Garage, so we don't need to see the movie.
Yeah.
All right. You want to do some plugs?
Let's do some plugs. Let's start off with thefanboygarage.com. Go there to listen to the current episode. Check out the episode archive. Check out our merch store and buy some stuff. And also, you can shop on Amazon, because I know people shop on the Amazon. You can shop on Amazon using our Amazon Associate link. Shopping through that link does not cost anything extra. No data is collected. It's just your same Amazon shopping experience, but a small kickback comes back to help support our show. And of course, if you buy merchandise from a merch store, that also helps support our show. And of course, please interact with us. On Twitter, you can find me at RealCLMighty.
You can find me on Twitter at StartingSith.
And you can find the show at The Fanboy Garage.
Yeah, you can buy this awesome, I'm trying to click it back on, gem.
You can buy Aaron's fart machine.
Yeah, my fart machine. This awesome Thanos Infinity Gauntlet. On Amazon. I got it there. It's pretty awesome.
There you go.
And it was actually sold out.
Was it really?
Damn, this thing's loud.
Well, I can't imagine. How many of those do they produce? Probably not an insane amount, right?
I don't know.
Like, that's not like a little plastic thing you buy like at like Toys R Us. Well, I guess you don't buy anything at Toys R Us anymore.
But I didn't realize how freaking big this toy. Oh, boy. And by the way, I got yelled at.
Oh, I was going to say, how did that go? How did that go over?
Yelled at for this thing.
Yeah.
My wife was like, "What the F is that?" And I was like, "Shh."
It could be worse. I know somebody who used to drunk eBay. So,
oh, God.
Yeah, in the middle of the night.
I've done that a couple of times.
In the middle of the night, they would drunk eBay. And then one day, that stopped because one day a very heavy package got delivered to their house. And his wife is like, "What the hell did you buy?" And he opens the box and it was a cannonball. And that was the end of his drunk eBay days.
Oh, boy, yeah. She probably dropped that bad boy right on his foot.
Yeah, that didn't go over well. So
damn.
Don't drink on eBay.
I was chasing vintage Star Wars toys, man. And I was like, yeah, I'll pay $300 for Yoda. And I did. But it's honestly, it's probably like my most expensive vintage Star Wars toy. It's mint on the card. The clear bubble. That's a big deal.
Did she buy it?
Did who?
Story?
I told her. So we have a very open and honest relationship here in the Varola household, and I told her, babe, at some point, this will be worth a lot more money. And so she was like, okay. But now I get nagged with the, when are you going to start selling all your crap?
Right, Chris. Eventually, in order for that to actually work, you must turn that around and sell it. Yes, or else it's just a $300 loss on your shelf.
It's a timepiece, Chris.
Yes, I know. You don't have to tell me. I have Michael Keaton in my closet.
There you go. Well, he's in your closet. I've got Yoda on full display. I've got a lot of crazy stuff, man. I don't even know what the hell's wrong with me. I gotta stop. Last Comic Con, I came home with a full scale replica of Vader's helmet. I'm not even playing.
Well, who doesn't need that?
I'm not even playing with you. It's like it's an actual like.
You leave that. You put that like on the dining room table and put candles around it.
No, actually, I use it to scare the crap out of my daughter when she's being bad.
Okay, well, that works too.
Yeah, you know, it's all about traumatizing. But sure. It's so funny because she's a big fan of Vader, like a big fan. She'll go, Daddy, Darth.
Wow.
I'm like, wow. Somehow she figured out that the furry, because I had a Chewbacca, a furry guy on my couch was Baka. So she has claimed him as her own, and sleeps with Baka every night.
Very nice. Well, maybe if you show her the prequel trilogy, she might get over that love of Vader.
Yeah. Oh boy. But anyways, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for listening. As always, you know, be sure to send us the reviews and get at us on Twitter. And Have a good night, y'all.
All right, take care. Talk to you next time.